Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Concerns over American health insurance policy are mounting ahead of midterm elections. A group of North and South Dakotans called Dakotans for Health is focused on maintaining provisions of the Affordable Care Act. They've released the South Dakota Rural Health Report. Rick Weiland and Adam Weiland stopped by the SDPB studios to talk about the challenges of rural health care and how the politics of the Affordable Care Act are impacting us all.
Since the Trump administration recently decided to double down on this, Texas versus the U.S. lawsuit, which 20 states' attorney generals have already signed on to, including our own here in South Dakota, this has become a real serious threat to people who have a pre-existing medical condition, kids who are on their parents' policies until they're 26, people that are chronically ill that exceed these previous lifetime caps. So this puts it all in play again. You know, you thought this was handled with the initial Supreme Court decision and the sort of lack of success the Republicans had on the floor of the United States Congress to repeal and replace with something. Well, we're back in the heart of it here, and we're a few months out from an election. So we think it's real important that people understand what's at stake. That if this lawsuit were to pass, how many people would be impacted. So we formed this group called Dakotans for Health. We've been working both in North Dakota and here in South Dakota to try to educate the voters, basically. And that's what this effort's about.
Let's paint a picture of what it is like to live in rural South Dakota and access to health care and some of the challenges that, from financial to location. Adam, kind of give us an idea of what it's like in rural South Dakota that might be different from other states.
Yeah, well, it's generally access to health coverage or health care services in rural communities is more difficult in urban communities because we're spread out, and we've seen an increase in closures of rural medical facilities. I think South Dakota had a rural hospital close just in 2010. There are a lot of reasons for that. The report discusses us not expanding Medicaid as potentially one of them, but these are a number of contributing factors that lead to reduced healthcare outcomes in rural states like South Dakota. So when it comes to this lawsuit, the Texas versus U.S. lawsuit, it's particularly tough on us here in rural states like North and South Dakota.
So we've been through so much of this conversation about health care, and sometimes we cover the same ground again. So the Affordable Care Act was not perfect by any stretch, but it is now the efforts to repeal and replace it failed in Congress, and now there are individual efforts to take away certain elements of it as an ongoing process to reform ACA. Is that a fair overview of what's to catch people up who...
I think that is. I mean, it is sort of a death by a thousand cuts strategy. And, you know, the repeal of the individual mandate has already, contributed to sort of the instability of the insurance market itself, the increase in premiums. That was one thing that they accomplished, was destabilizing the insurance market and jacking up premiums. But now this whole idea of going after people with pre-existing conditions is seriously on the table. 358,000 South Dakotans have a pre-existing medical condition. And you go down and you break those numbers down, 200,000 of those 358,000 are on Medicare, right? You know, and keep in mind, this is what's so interesting. You get to Medicare, at age 65, you're not denied because you have a pre-existing condition. You got health insurance, and you don't pay so much out of pocket. So here we are sitting here with over 200,000 South Dakotans. If this lawsuit were to be successful before a new Supreme Court, if it were to be challenged, and you got 200,000 South Dakotans that may end up either without any health insurance at all because they're not coverable, based on the new sort of view of the world, or it's unaffordable. As I heard my son say the other day in an interview, that we're going back to the dark ages here. We accomplished quite a bit with the Affordable Care Act on those fronts. I mean, look at just the top three things that may be at risk: people with a pre-existing medical condition. The fact of the matter is, prior to the Affordable Care Act, if you exceeded a certain lifetime limit of expenses, then you were basically thrown off your insurance policy. And we have a lot of young adults being able to stay on their parents' health insurance policies till the age of 26. And Adam had a situation, you should talk about it. I mean, we were in that situation not that long ago mm-hmm. where he was diagnosed with this pre-existing medical condition.
Right. At what age then? Relatively young for as severe of a condition as it was.
Yeah, and that's oftentimes what is what happens when younger people are diagnosed with conditions like this. I must have been somewhere around 24 years old when I was diagnosed with a very rare pre-existing conditions. And pre-existing conditions, by the way, aren't rare. I mean, they're cancer, asthma, diabetes, and pregnancy.
They're just conditions.
They're just
it's
conditions.
Just they're classified by insurance companies as pre-existing once you move for so you have a condition. You have a health crisis of some sort.
Exactly. Mine was a different condition. It was known as Wolff-Parkinson-White syndrome, which is a heart condition. I was diagnosed with it in the peak of health, had to have a corrective procedure. And because of the ACA and these protections, not only for pre-existing conditions, but this protection for allowing people to stay on their parents' health insurance plan until they're 26, which when that law went into effect was particularly important, was during the height of the economic crisis, right? So you had a lot of younger people in the country who were actually not in jobs that had benefits. In South Dakota, we've got 6,000 kids right now enrolled in their parents' health insurance plan. I thankfully happened to be one of them back in 2011 when the law went into effect, and I was able to have a life-saving corrective procedure, which would have absolutely broken my back financially if I had to pay out of pocket for it.
One of the challenges with ACA in general has been the cost, because nothing's free. So even though we talk about the instability in the insurance market, there are challenges to providing this kind of health care to everyone, and that's been one of the things that you've often heard our congressional delegates talk about. You know, yes, everybody wants to keep protection for people with pre-existing condition. Yes, everyone wants it's particularly popular to keep kids on parents' health plans until 26. Some of the other things have been challenged more frequently, the mandates. And concerns
but
about
connected
the overall
too,
cost.
Yeah. I mean,
tell us how.
Well, an individual mandate, which was part of the Affordable Care Act, required people, adults, to contribute, a premium price, to the overall, insurance pool, and a lot of people at a younger age are usually a lot healthier, and they're not drawing on those health benefits. I wrote a letter the other day about, during the debate on Social Security and Medicare. I mean, those were individual mandates. People had to kick into Social Security, and as a result, we've accomplished quite a bit. I mean, the promise of Social Security has kept a lot of people out of poverty. Same thing with Medicare. That was an individual mandate. People don't want to look at it that way, but, what is the theory of insurance? You got to spread the risk mm-hmm. in order for insurance to work. So that was very, very key to, I think, the overall effort to reduce the price of health insurance was to make sure everybody was paying into it.
Right. Are both those programs, those Social Security and Medicare, also facing financial challenges of
their
own? Well,
if we quit borrowing from the Social Security Trust Fund, I think we'd be in pretty good shape. And the overall crisis we've had in healthcare has contributed to the problems with Medicare solvency. It's so interesting. Okay, I just celebrated a birthday, a big one, and I'm thinking, okay, I got 5 years now until I can get on Medicare. My current premium right now is quite a bit more than what I pay to live in my house. And that's just the reality. But we can't be kicking over 200,000 people to the street because of a lawsuit that I believe was more driven by politics than policy. And that's kind of where we're headed. And people ought to be paying attention to this because, as we said, 358,000 people in South Dakota have a pre-existing medical condition. A lot of those folks, 87,000 some, aren't at the age of Medicare. They're under 65 years of age. We got over 20,000 or 50,000 children that have a pre-existing condition in South Dakota. So, you know, everybody, you either know someone or you are personally at risk. And, you know, it's really unfortunate that this lawsuit is progressing, and with the changes in the makeup of the Supreme Court, it's hard to say what's going to happen going forward.
Talk a little bit about these smaller plans. And people say, well, I don't need maternity care, or I don't need mental health services, and I want the choice to purchase a plan that's less comprehensive for a smaller amount of money. Some of the challenges with that, would you address those, Adam?
Yeah, so those are what are referred to as skinny plans or junk insurance plans. And they're cheap for a reason. They provide very limited coverage, and they're less regulated, which means that it's harder for you to get reimbursed for even a seemingly approvable operation or service under that plan, and there are few of them. And again, so it's really no solution at all, because this whole idea of reduced healthcare outcomes that our argument, this lawsuit, is contributing to, junk insurance programs really won't do anything for them.
And a lot of time, they don't cover people with pre-existing medical conditions.
Oh, yeah, excuse me. Yeah, no, they're not, and they're exempt. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. More importantly, they're exempt. Yeah.
They don't cover people with pre-existing conditions. And if you happen to get really sick, they have caps on how much they're going to pay. I mean, that's usually the way it goes.
These were here. These existed before ACA. Yeah. They weren't maybe...
Catastrophic is what we used to call them, catastrophic insurance plans. You're taking the risk that... you're not going to get cancer or a brain tumor or
accident. We talk a little bit about, and you say that some people say, I want to assume that risk to save money. People have been gambling with the fact that they will not have a catastrophic health crisis for...
Well, and a lot of people back, I'm sure, in the 30s and the 60s when Medicare came into being were saying, you know, I'll assume that risk. I'll take care of my own retirement. I'll take care of my own if I become disabled. I'll take care of my own health insurance when I need it at the age of 65. I'll just pay whatever the market's going to pay. We wouldn't have two of the most popular federal programs in the history of the republic, Social Security and Medicare, where politicians are afraid to go after them, even though they may like to, because they don't seem to fit with their ideology. But that's where we're at here. I think because the Affordable Care Act has been around now for a while, and people understand, well, a lot of people would say, well, I'm against the Obamacare, but don't touch my pre-existing condition coverage because I need that. I used to see those banners at political rallies as, you know, government, keep your hands off my Medicare, which I could never connect the dots because Medicare is government insurance that people pay for. The Affordable Care Act was compromise, but you know, everybody needed to pay into it to be able to cover pre-existing conditions, to be able to cover pharmaceutical coverage, to be able to cover keeping your kids on your policy till you're 26. Those are all the things when the whole package was finally put together that I believe moved the ball forward in this country when it came to healthcare security.
We go back to the fact that this is a lawsuit, and therefore it will go through the court system, perhaps all the way to the United States Supreme Court. That seems to be separate from, I mean, doesn't that have to play out and find out what is constitutional and what is not? Why have the conversation tied to a lawsuit? Is it part of a bigger philosophical discussion? Is it a part of a political discussion for midterm elections? How do you sort of see that conversation being important right now as the lawsuit moves forward?
Yeah, of course. So the reason it's important right now is because it's happening right now. So the lawsuit, South Dakota, our Attorney General, Marty Jackley, joined the lawsuit in February. And in June, President Trump's Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, actually took the very unusual step of announcing that the Department of Justice was not going to defend its own law. And that's what really raises red flags about this issue, because it's his constitutional duty. I don't know if he's required to do it, or it's constitutional duty to uphold and defend the law. And the DOJ
takes the oath.
Yeah. And the DOJ has taken a pass on this. And so that's why it's important. And that's why this conversation is happening this summer. And you know, it coincides with an election, but this is what's going on right now, and that's why it's important to be having these conversations.
What else needs to be fixed about the Affordable Care Act? If the lawsuit is not successful, let's say, and there is no major change than what we have right now, we're still seeing increases in premiums. We're still seeing huge bills at our doctor's office.
Part of that, I think, has been driven by this just absolute constant drumbeat to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. When you, as I said earlier in this interview, Lori, when you pull back on the individual mandate, insurance premiums are going to go up. When you cut funding for, you know, to promote enrollment, which has been going insurance markets are going to be destabilized. They've done everything that they've been capable of doing, with the exception of all-out repeal of the Affordable Care Act, to destabilize it. And to make it go away. This lawsuit, and with Sessions now not defending the government's own law, puts it back into play. And, you know, as Adam said earlier, they don't even have a strategy to replace. We're going to repeal and then try to figure it out later. Well, that just isn't going to work, and there are going to be a lot of people hurt in the process. So people need to be paying attention to how this could affect them. I got a feeling there are a lot of folks that signed on with that lawsuit that might, you know, live to regret it, or might be regretting it even as we're talking to you today, because the whole idea of, and you've heard the president say this, you know, well, we got to have pre-existing conditions, you know, we got to have that protection. He said that about his own campaign. Well, here's a lawsuit that's going to get rid of that.
That's Rick and Adam Weiland. They stopped by the SDPB Sioux Falls studios to talk about the Affordable Care Act and the report, South Dakota Rural Health.